This episode of the Squawker Talker is brought to you by Beer 52. Beer 52 is the world's number one craft beer club and delivers crates of hand-picked craft beer to your door. Squawker Talker listeners can get £12 off a crate and two free beers by using the code SQUAWKER at checkout. So if you like a good deal on beer, visit beer52.com.
Great pleasure to welcome Gareth David, the lead singer and main songwriter of football-loving band Los Campesinos, on one-on-one this week, here to tell us about their new album, Six Scenes, out this month on the 24th of February. And we're going to be playing two tracks from the album coming up in the show. Thanks for coming in for a one-on-one, Gareth. How's it going? How's been the album? Are you excited about it and what can fans expect from it?
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's real pleasure, real privilege to be here. It's nice to be in a football environment for a change. And yeah, really excited about Six Scenes coming out. It's our first record for 3 years, which by our standards is the longest we've ever gone without releasing a record. And I think as a result of waiting that long period of time, we're all especially excited to release it and to, I guess, primarily to go on tour and get to drink lots for free. That's the main motivation.
And you're touring America first, starting from Seattle.
Yeah, we're in America for the release of the album, which is especially exciting. Playing San Francisco the day that the record comes out, which will be incredible. It's our first proper US tour for 5 years. Somehow it doesn't seem that long, but it is. And yeah, we start in Seattle. A brilliant city, a great sporting city as well, actually. And
that's on the 20th, right?
On the 20th. We fly on the 18th. It's sort of a nervous time at the moment because we're in the process of trying to get our visas sorted, which obviously, things being as they are in the United States, it's not the easy.
Do you think you might have any problems with
that? If we do, I'll be heartbroken and have lost a lot of money. But we've got... You know, you have to present your passport with all your previous visas in it, and we've all got multiple visas each. There's never been a problem in the past, so I don't. I'm slightly worried that having a Mexican band name could come back to bite us. But
Los Campos, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I don't want to tempt fate, and touch wood, we'll be okay.
Well, and Los Campesinos, for people who don't know, what is the meaning? Is it it's a Spanish word, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it translates as the farmers. It would be great if I could say the reason for that is because of my own West Country accent, which you can hear, but I wasn't. I didn't join the band until it was about 2 weeks old, by which point they already had a band name, so I don't take any responsibility for it. But it's been useful in terms of some of the places that we've been able to play. We've played play Colombia and Argentina and Venezuela, and I think that having the Spanish name was an in there, certainly.
But were they expecting a South American band coming from the UK? Or
in that circumstance, no. Thankfully, there was one of our earliest gigs that we played in New York, we were put on a bill that was like very much world music. And I do think that was due to them thinking that we were going to be a mariachi band, but we have only got ourselves to blame.
Well, let's talk about football now. Let's take you on a sort of trip down memory lane. When did you, do you remember the moment you fell in love with the game?
This is completely the wrong answer, but not at all. I was really late come into football, I think. I was about, I think, about nine when I started to like football, which does seem, I think, is a pretty old age. I was interested. One of my earliest footballing memories is the 1994 World Cup final, but not watching it, playing football across the field whilst it was on. Just, I guess, I must have had a vague interest in it to link those two events, but I remember like my dad watching it and shouting over what was going on. I'm surprised that if I was told it was a penalty shootout, I didn't run back in to watch it. But my first time I recall being feeling invested in a football match was the last day of the 94-95 Premier League season.
You started off as a Manchester United fan.
Yeah, Manchester United are still the team that the Football League team that I feel a sort of affinity with. If at the start of the season I was able to choose who would win the Premier League, I would choose Manchester United. But that's, I think, sort of being 9-10 years old and growing up in a place which didn't have a nearby Premier League team. You had free reign to pick. There was no pressure from anyone to, you got to pick whoever you wanted to support, really. And most of my mates supported Manchester United. The team that I support, as I'm sure we'll get onto, were, I would watch every Saturday afternoon, but you needed somebody to pretend to be in the playground. And so it was Manchester United. I remember the last day of the 94-95 season listening on the radio and being upset that Manchester United couldn't get the goal they needed against West Ham. And then I remember the FA Cup final, I guess a few days later. My first football shirt was a Mark Hughes Manchester United shirt from the 93-94 season. So I think my mother probably got it from a car boot sale for me. And I remember going to, was on holiday at Barry Island, getting Hughes 10 printed on the back in a very inappropriate font. And also due to the epaulets at the front of the shirt, it was the one with the shoelaces going across it.
Proper old school, that, yeah.
Yeah, the guy printing the number on the back of the shirt said, "I can't do it on the back of that, it'll damage the machine." So I had Hughes 10 like halfway down the back of this oversized shirt. So not a glorious start to my football fandom, but I loved playing football from that age, and that was my real passion then.
Yeah. And as you alluded to there, you were actually now more of a fan and have played for, well, the reserve team of Welton Rovers. How did that come about?
Welton Rovers is the team that I'm born into. My father is a Welton Rovers supporter. My grandfather is a Welton Rovers supporter and infamously played on one occasion for Welton Rovers' first team. It was a fixture when somebody was unable to make the game, so he had to play under his name. And obviously, being many, many years before internet or anything like that, he did so without being found out that he wasn't signed on. He assures me that it was the best write-up that player had ever had. And actually, it was nice, recently I got to speak to a couple of other people who played in that game and actually attested that my grandfather was a half-decent player. He wasn't just making it up. And his mother before him was heavily involved in the club, and it's just been, you know, going back to the 1800s even, that's how long my family's been involved in Welton Rovers. But I'm the first of my family to sort of get properly sucked into being involved, and I'm on the board of directors, and I write and edit the match day programme and loads of sort of menial tasks that I kind of regret taking on now, but probably wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. With it being the end of the transfer window recently, did the club sign anyone? What was their business like over? Did they have any business?
I do often wonder, because I'm so engrossed in that level of football, I wonder if the intricacies of it are interesting to people who tend to experience football at a greater level. There is a transfer deadline, but it's not until about the end of April. The process of making transfers at that level is it's something called 7 days, where you essentially, one club secretary will contact the other club secretary and say, we want to approach player X in 7 days. The club then has the right to either waive the 7 days and say, you can speak to them now, or make you wait 7 days. Mm. After those 7 days, you say, do you want to sign for us instead? Yep. Transfer happens. So that's a really, I think it's quite terrifying, actually, when you hear that somebody's put 7 days in for one of your players. Then
you're like, you're watching The Ring or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's I mean, sure, you might do the noble thing, or if they're not a particularly good player, you'll say, yeah, please just chat to them now. But otherwise, you'll do your best to delay it as long as you can to try to sort of claw some more money together to give them an extra £5 a week or I don't know, try to find out something to blackmail them with, something like that. But no excitement yesterday. I spoke to our secretary at Saturday's match asking if we had 7 days in for anyone. We have got 7 days in for a centre half, which would be appreciated. Our form isn't great at the moment, but I think
what tier of English football are we talking?
So we are talking level 10. So for that wouldn't mean much to me, so it basically goes, if once you go League Two, National League, then you've got National League North and South. Then so we're based in the southwest of the UK, so we'd be National League South, and then from there you go Southern League Premier, Southern League First Division, then you go Western League Premier, and then Western League First. That's what we were. In the Western League Premier last season, we got relegated. We finished rock bottom. It was a pretty bleak season to be honest. But it came as a result of we got promoted from the first two seasons ago. So that was the best footballing season of my life so far.
And of course, with the new album coming out, you've recording it last year, and the influence on it has been sort of a mixture of football and politics, you've said, and Portuguese football as well. How does football inspire your music?
To me, football is an incredibly natural thing to write about with my songwriting. And I resisted it for a long time because I think as sort of in the first couple of years as the band, as a precocious 20-something guy who surrounded himself with music and sort of supposed alternative culture, I turned my back on football a little bit because I thought that I am supposed to be a thoughtful guy and an artistic person, and I thought that was the opposite to what football was, because I'd grown a bit jaded of it and all the negative associations and cliches that you get with football. So I resisted it a little bit, but then I realised how foolish that was, because football has always been my main passion. And I think the broad spectrum of experiences that you can have within football, be it the highs, the lows, it's pure romance. And it's being that most songwriting is about love and death, that's what football is as well. Football is those, that amazing feeling of seeing your side score a last minute winner, and that crippling devastation of a relegation. And for me, that's, to include that in my songwriting is just an incredibly useful tool and very obvious. And yeah, so as you say, we were in the album 6 Scenes we recorded last summer in Portugal, which meant that we couldn't have picked a more perfect place to record it, because obviously Portugal would go on to win European Championships. We're all despite the fact that the band formed in Cardiff, Wales, we're all English, and we're often misrepresented as being Welsh, which again, it's our own fault. We say we're from Cardiff. We got to expect it. But we had the weird experience of watching these England matches in a tiny village in Portugal, which only had one bar, which was also a cafe, and had like a very old television piled up on the wall, and nobody there could speak a word of English, not that you could expect them to, and we couldn't speak a word of Portuguese. So it was a really enjoyable but weird interaction that we had with everyone.
Quite surreal.
Yeah, very much so. There's a line on one of the songs you mentioned, I Broke Up in Amarante. Sorry, didn't mention it, but I think you might play it. Which is referencing the day after the Portugal-Austria match, which saw Cristiano Ronaldo miss a penalty, coming in to the cafe, seeing the newspaper on the top of the counter and this image of a desolate Ronaldo, and trying to somehow convey how that felt to ask the person behind the counter how they were feeling about it without being able to speak. And then that just saw us both
giving thumbs down, making noises, and but fully got across the
language of football, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the language of football. A thumbs down and a that's about it.
As you mentioned, I broke up in Amarante. We're going to hear it right now.
I found a home away from home as I broke up in Amarante. In the Campo do Carvalho, send a circle every day. Erratic kamikaze, I co-piling in the swift. Dreamt I'm anchoring that midfield like the anchor in my midriff.
And that was I Broke Up in Amarante. And you funded this new album quite uniquely. How did you... You were selling 10th anniversary football shirts of the band.
Yeah, and I still haven't worked out what the 10-year version of centenary is, because centenary shirt sounds great, but I don't know what the alternative for a 10-year shirt would be. But yeah, we found ourselves going into... wanting to make a new record, but also not wanting to be indebted to a record label, because as a band, you generally speaking, you go through a cycle of borrowing money from record labels to record a record and then selling that record to make the money back to give to a record label. And we've done that for a number of years, and we didn't want to do that anymore. We're self-managed now, and we want to be self-sufficient. And so
Do you prefer working that way? Or?
Absolutely, yeah. I wish that it's something I wish we did 3 or 4 years ago now. It's just so rewarding to know exactly where every penny that you are spending or making is going. And not that I'm suggesting that...
That may have affected, yeah.
Yeah, before. But it's just so reassuring to see it. And we've got the time, we've got the ability to do it, and it seems... bit lazy to pass that on to someone else. But when it came to recording an album, we know that a large amount of our fan base are football supporters as well. And we know that even those who aren't football supporters seem to like the fact that we like football so much as well, especially in America. I think that people like that and know that about our band. So we designed and manufactured an Adidas Los Campesinos football shirt. I think a lot of people initially thought that they would knock off Adidas, because why would Adidas make a football shirt for Los Campesinos? And of course, Adidas wouldn't make a football shirt for Los Campesinos, but we just went through the same channels that you'd use to get a Sunday League kit made. Mm. Just with Adidas as the kit manufacturer. And even if I'm actually... probably more than any album or piece of music we've made, those football shirts are what I am most proud of. They look really beautiful. My five-a-side team wore them, so we were obviously targeted for heavy tackles immediately, as we looked a bit fancy. But
oh, look at you with that stripes.
Yeah. And we thought we might sell 100 or so, and then within a week we sold over 1,000. Made enough money to record an album. We did a kit launch with your usual cliche arms folded photos, that sort of thing, and people really loved it. We could have sold more, but I was posting them out from my own home, and I just didn't have enough space anymore. So that was really, really rewarding, and already I think I've seen them changing hands for inflated fees, which is in the true spirit of football.
Well, collector's items, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. We should start doing match-worn ones, I think. Wear them on stage.
Oh, and definitely. Signed as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what is the strangest experience you've had in the realms of football, be it sort of playing or online or as a fan as well?
I guess in terms of strangeness, more just what is compared to what I'm used to from watching football, one of the things I wish we'd taken advantage of a bit more, being that we get to travel the world a lot. I know some bands, for example, Futureheads, whenever they were in foreign cities, they'd plan going to see football matches into their schedule. We, right before the 2014 World Cup in Brazil, we played a gig in Sao Paulo, literally like a week before it kicked off or so, and I was so tempted to
stay. What was that like?
It was really depressing, because it was, nobody wanted it. Genuinely, there was no sense of excitement for the competition, obviously, with all the economic and the political situation as it was, and the stadium's not necessarily going to be ready on time. It was really, there was a sense of, there was no excitement at all, which was disappointing. I think also we were in Sao Paulo when it was in like its worst run of weather in several decades, so that really we didn't get to experience that cliche of
But the show went okay.
The show was fun, but we were supporting the Jesus and Mary Chain, so it was an honor to do that, but it was torrential rain and there was a big crowd, but
Can't quite strike the same chord.
It was not the like all singing, all dancing samba affair that we were signed up for. But one good thing about being over there is that we got to go see Sao Paulo play. We saw them in a match against Grêmio, and Pato was playing. And is it Cini?
Rogério Cini.
The goal-scoring goalkeeper. Which is a player that I have modelled myself on in the past. So it was great to see him from a distance. But it was amazing experiencing football in that context. Mm. It was again maybe a little anticlimactic, because it was a huge stadium that was barely a quarter full, and the seats that we had were understandably not amongst the best of the atmosphere with the bands and the ultras and what have you.
So that's what you'd like to have been. As a band yourself, you might want to get involved and start using the instruments they've got there.
Yeah, maybe given an impromptu performance there. But that was amazing to watch it in that context, especially that close to the World Cup, even though it wasn't in the spirit that that anybody visiting would have liked it to be, to experience that so far, especially because the football that I'm used to watching couldn't be further away from.
What was the standard like there? Because people who've been to Brazil and watched games there say it's been, you know, it's kind of mixed.
Yeah, it's where we were was, I would say, pretty typical of any Premier League or Championship ground I've been to. Not as polished, but in terms of layout and setup. But the tiers above us was where the action seemed to be happening, and that seemed to be a free for all. What was more remarkable was the approach to the ground, where you had people selling hot dogs out the back of the boots of their cars and things like that, and bottled water, and people attempting to sell CDs and things like that. It was a really, it seemed that most people flooded to the match just like 10 minutes before, and it was just a real wave of people coming in one go. And it was an absolutely, it was amazing. And actually the most surreal thing about that is at the end of the match, people who were sat like two rows in front of us turned around and said, "Are you Los Campesinos? I'm going to see you tomorrow." It's like, wow, we are famous. Fantastic.
That's great. And you're also playing whilst you're at festivals, you play in a team, in a five-a-side team, in Cardiff, in Sooner Festival?
I'm very glad you've mentioned this. I wouldn't have thought to mention it myself, but it's one of the proudest moments of my life. Sooner Festival is a great festival run out of Cardiff, a sort of... a city festival, not dissimilar to the likes of maybe the now defunct Camden Crawl or Great Escape or something like that. So you've got all the venues within the city putting on bands and in a festival style. But it's too long ago now, 2011, they did a five-a-side competition inviting local music fans and local bands to enter teams. We entered the team. It was three of us from our band, a gentleman called John Mouse, a gentleman called Mark Foley, a record shop owner called Matt Jarrett, and our goalkeeping best mate and number one Tranmere fan, Peter Brown. And we won the competition. We greased it, as we say. It was like a 16 group stage, and I think we sneaked through in second place, and then we won the semi-final on penalties after a 0-0 draw, in which we had one shot on target, and then we won the final on penalties after a 0-0 draw, and we were all knackered. So we just set out to defend and be obnoxious, and everybody genuinely hated us for it. But I think that the fact that I think we were probably the only team that turned up with a definitive game plan, and it worked. So that was a real glory day, and they've not held the competition since. That was the only time it occurred, so we are still the reigning champions, and I'm relieved because I don't think any of us have got it in us anymore.
Is it you're heading back this year or not?
Sooner Festival is every October, November. If you've never visited Cardiff, that would be a good excuse to visit it. And but it was December 2011 was the inaugural and only Sooner Festival five-a-side tournament, and as I say, I hope it never happens again.
And of course, you're a big fan of Neil Warnock anecdotes. I've seen on your Twitter quite a few popping up.
Yeah. Have you read Neil's autobiography?
I have not. It sounds like I need to now.
Neil. I know that Neil Warnock is a very divisive character, and I've gone off him recently because he made some offhand comments when he was a pundit on Sky.
Recently. Stephen Gerrard.
Some Liverpudlian cliches that are more than
distasteful, let's say.
And not even vaguely funny. I mean, come on. But I would recommend his autobiography to anybody, as it is, it genuinely is, it couldn't be a lot more Partridge if it tried to be. The anecdotes are...
It's like an incident with FitzHall.
A brilliant incident when Neil Warnock's at QPR and one of his, I think it's a son rather than a grandson, is collecting Match Attacks cards, trading cards, and each player is rated by a five-star rating. And Warnock, that's a very weird motivational technique. He basically told all his players how lowly their rating was on these Match Attacks cards, but none more than FitzHall, who was a one-star player supposedly. FitzHall didn't seem to put up much of a fight. Mm.
And now your biggest inspiration in football,
Who might that be? Someone you might have come across, or someone you've, you know, watched over the years?
In terms of secondhand experiences, I love the folklore and the stories around Brian Clough. Again, a figure that I think when you go look too deeply, not a particularly nice character, but certainly the romance of those Forest and Derby teams that he put together. I think also probably because there's a wealth of great books about Clough and that time from the likes of Jonathan Wilson and Daniel Taylor and a few others as well. So I love the stories. I think Clough's history as well, the fact that he was a player that should have been so much more but had it snuffed out by injury and then seemed to redeem that by having a fantastic, if short, well, cut short managerial career. So yeah, Brian Clough is a great one.
Which of the films do you like, or the documentaries, the Damn United, that kind of thing?
I like David Peace a lot. I've read his Red Riding series as well. Is brilliant. I wasn't such a fan of the Red or Dead book that he did. I find that a bit too hard going. But the Damn United movie, I didn't enjoy as much. It was a sanitized version of the book, and the book is some great writing, in my opinion. I know that the Clough family isn't necessarily a massive fan of it, but that's probably explains what a good book it is. But the Jonathan Wilson biography, all Jonathan Wilson's books are ones that I've massively enjoyed, but that's a real tome, but a real great read.
Yeah. And Tony Cascarino, is that are you still?
Yeah, Tony Cascarino is somebody that I name checked. I think he was the first footballer I name checked in a song. The lyric from our 2008 album, We Are Beautiful, We Are Doomed, from the song All Your Kayfabe Friends. Lyric goes, you asked if I'd be anyone from history, fact or fiction, dead or alive. I said I'll be Tony Cascarino circa 1995. Tony Cascarino is, this might be, if you ask me about my favourite books later, this might be a spoiler for it, but his autobiography, Full Time, is an incredible, have you read it?
I have not, no.
It's brilliant. It's like no other footballing autobiography I've read. It's written almost like fiction a lot of the time. I don't know who wrote it alongside him. I really should, because they did a fantastic job, and I should go out of my way to find out what other sporting autobiographies they've done. But 1995, Tony Cascarino has kind of had a couple of disappointing spells at the likes of Chelsea and Villa. Obviously, he had good times at Millwall, but he's kind of hit a bit of a dead end in his career. And he makes the move that so many British or Irish players won't, and I know it's a cliche in itself by now, but he moves abroad. He moves to France. He signs for Marseille, and he is on fire. His personal life is in turmoil at that time. He's suffered a lot from self doubt and depression. There's some great monologues about that in there. But so he finds himself in Marseille. He starts an affair with a nanny over there, which obviously is a questionable personal choice, but it feeds into the story particularly well. And yeah, he does fantastically. He's an absolute hero in Marseille, and it's I guess I admire him for that. I love that idea of A, being able to admit this isn't for me anymore, I'll go and try it somewhere else. And that's with regards to the football, not the affair. And then
just to clear that up.
Yeah. And B, just then really, I guess, two fingers up to anybody who was doubting him at Chelsea, Villa, Celtic, and just really going way past what he could have expected. I think he I'm trying to think of the other clubs that he played for. I think Red Star as well, perhaps. But I'm due a reread of that, to be honest.
What is the best game you've seen live?
Is it cheating if I pick a Welton game, or is that allowed?
I think I can give you, I'm granting you one Welton,
but I have to,
and
give
then
you
one.
Else as
yeah,
well. Okay, I can do that. Well, my best Welton game ever is the climax of the 2014 14-15 season, which saw us in a situation where we needed to win to ensure promotion. And unlike the Premier League, there's no, it's not as if every game has to be played at the same time on the final day. The nature of the way that fixtures get postponed and stuff, that would really be possible. We found ourselves playing away at Cheddar, who got a bit of fame this year as they got the furthest they ever had in the...
What, cheese rolling competitions? Or?
In the FA Cup, oh, in no, fact. Yes. They were featured in the national press, so that got rammed down our throats a bit. But Cheddar are a very good team in themselves. They do a very good job of keeping a squad together over seasons, which is the hardest thing to do at that level. We went 1-0 up due to a penalty, feeling good about things. And then about 35 minutes into the game, our goalkeeper comes out to claim a low ball at the edge of the box. Loads of time, no danger at all. Their centre forward launches himself into our goalkeeper, breaks his jaw. We have to wait for ambulance to come to remove him from the pitch so that the game can continue. And it wouldn't have been... We've got a sub goalkeeper. We got five substitutes on the bench, so a squad of 16. Unfortunately, the goalkeeper is the 17th man, as he wasn't named on the bench because we thought we're going to need attacking options in case we're not winning. And so we've not got a goalkeeper we can bring on. Up steps one of my recent favourite Welton Rovers players, a guy called Tom Smith, takes the gloves, continues to do the rest of the match with the goalkeeping coach literally stood behind the goal, telling him, like, step to your right, okay, move out a bit, completely as though he was playing a game of FIFA with him. We concede an equaliser, but then remarkably in the second half, we go on to win 3-1 to secure promotion. And the ups and downs of that were absolutely incredible. We rode our luck, but that promotion was... My high point of following Welton, and I suppose my high point of football as a result. And in terms of this is difficult because the only being that I follow Welton Rovers home and away and have done for, well, I'm 31 and since I was big enough for my dad to carry me out to the football light, I don't see much other football in the flesh.
As well as you're going to be a neutral for that as well, if you're going to one.
I've been to a fair few Premier League grounds. I've been to... Oh, actually, I don't recall it as well as I should do, but I was at the Liverpool-Arsenal FA Cup final from... it must be the late 90s. Was that 90 or early noughties? But I was very lucky. My grandfather's best friend for a number of years was the chairman of the Somerset FA, and so they always get all the regional FAs get an allowance of tickets for each FA Cup final, so we had access to those. So I think from 98 until about 2004 I went to every FA Cup final, so I was very, very privileged in that. I remember very excitedly once taking home a Lucozade bottle that I'd seen Robbie Fowler drink from. Just a plastic, a throwaway bottle, not a proper 2-litre one. But I think that would probably sit on my shelf for about a week before my mum.
Have there been any games that have inspired lyrics in your songs then?
There's been footballing moments that have inspired lyrics. Yeah. I think as we go on further in our career as a band, I'm getting more esoteric in what I'm allowing myself to write. So,
are you all the band sort of football fans, or is there ever a time where the rest of the band are thinking, oh, not again with this football thing? Or
yeah, I would say there's seven of us in the band. Of those seven, five of us are huge football fans. Yeah. The sixth is bandmate Matt, who is not obsessive but enjoys it, and then the seventh is my sister Kim, who isn't interested in football but knows far more than she would want
by default.
Just from growing up alongside myself and just hearing us talk about it, the number of football podcasts that she's listened to because we've played them loud in the van and she's had no choices, she wouldn't want to recall. So no, everybody's happy with it. And I think I guess I do I have been taking it to extremes with the lyrics, but people are okay with it. There's a song from our 2013 album, No Blues, a song called Gloomy, which has the lyric, people laugh, they will call it folly, but we connected like a Yeboah volley. And from the same song, leave with all the dignity of a missed Panenka penalty. So
there's these little iconic moments, I suppose.
Yeah. And again, they're analogies that that for me sum up those situations perfectly. I think you know if you're talking about connecting with somebody on a personal or a romantic level, then if you connected with them as well as Yeboah connected with those two goals against Wimbledon and Liverpool, then you're onto a good start.
And do you still hold out hope of writing or doing the England anthem for a World Cup?
It was every time that there is an international tournament, there is this brief moment where we think, should we do it? Like, do our own version?
Yeah.
I've written it before. And
you approached the FA? Or
no, I don't think we'd stand a chance of that. In fact, I can't even recall who the last few official songs have been by. But I get Three Lions 96 and especially Three Lions 98, I think are two absolutely brilliant songs. And I would rank them up there as being amongst my top five favourite songs of all time. I think part of the reason why there aren't really any good official football songs anymore is because Three Lions really did nail it perfectly, especially at that time in the 90s. I think it's a genuinely great song. So we couldn't ever compete with that. So I shan't try.
Do you think that's kind of in a way why there aren't many songs? Because you know, football's so big, you'd expect more bands to be writing songs with some sort of football lyric in them. Do you think it's they don't want to get sort of labelled or kind of with the cliche that comes with it, even though there have been great songs over the years?
Yeah, I think perhaps there is a worry of that, and I think that football and music are too often seen as being opposites to each other. That football is this primal and aggressive And music is an art, and I think that there's a lot more similarities than a lot of people would care to admit.
And even with the sort of terminology, you know, you use a trek artiste, things like that, and then sort of historical Bella Gutmann as well coming up now and again.
Yeah. That's one of my the Bella Gutmann story is one of the best footballing like myths or whatever that there's ever been. I think
so was it the curse of Benfica?
After he won the European Cup a couple of times with Benfica and left due to financial reasons, I think he supposedly cursed Benfica, saying that they would never win another European title. And there's stories about after Gutmann's death, Eusebio visiting his grave and trying to in an attempt to lift the curse, and sure enough, Benfica haven't won. They've come close on a few occasions, but the curse is still intact. And I think that's a good point, actually. Within the language and the characters of football over the years, a book that I've just finished reading is Jonathan Wilson's Angels with Dirty Faces, which was a slog, but was so rewarding constantly. And the amount of characters that he mentions within that, I think probably South American football is ripe with those players who sort of verge on the edge of being artists almost. I think usually when you talk about footballers as rock stars, it's the likes of George Best and people like that. But I think maybe
do you think there's anyone playing today, sort of current big sides, who is sort of going to become a rock star in their own right?
I've heard anecdotes about I know Leighton Baines had a section, like a music blog section, on the Everton website for a while. I remember him being a big Mercury Rev fan, which you wouldn't necessarily expect. Xabi Alonso is a big fan of like My Bloody Valentine and Lush and things like that. I know that it was always said Michael Carrick roadied for his brother-in-law's band or something, and apparently Gareth Ainsworth plays in a rock covers band. But I mean, looking at him, yeah, that's not a surprise.
Gareth, he's the Wickham boss, isn't he?
Yeah,
who nearly beat Tottenham.
Yes, I read a it's not a book that I've read completely, but is it Living on the Volcano?
Yes, that is Michael Calvin.
I think it was Gareth Ainsworth. There was an anecdote in there about how he'd wear like a neckerchief or something, and he said that when the
some sort of cravat.
He said when the opposition manager came out and saw that he was wearing a cravat, and the opposition manager would be wearing a tracksuit or something.
Yeah.
That Ainsworth already had the upper hand, and it was like tantamount to getting an opening and goal in the first minute. It's like, I'm not so sure about that, but if it helps.
There's a lot to be said about managers' fashion that is not sort of not quite touched upon.
No, I think that's one of the great questions about if you were in their position, what would your chosen attire be on the touchline?
Well, if I'm Football Manager, for example, I'll go for the suit. I wouldn't be a tracksuit. I wouldn't be a Tony Pulis, let's say.
I think I'm a huge Football Manager fan, but I think perhaps that for next year, you need to hire somebody a bit more sartorially minded, because those tracksuits are very ill-fitting that you can choose on the template at the start. But yes, see, I go for on Football Manager, I do go for the suit and tie.
Mm.
I think I'd be tracksuit in real life, like a slim-fitting tracksuit. Yeah.
Mm.
Not quite Pulis.
Not quite Pulis. But we've got, I think, your first option on the three football books that we have to read.
Yes.
Angels with Dirty Faces, are you going to go with it? Or
I did love Angels with Dirty Faces, but it's having only finished it yesterday, I can't quite put it up there in the top three yet. The other two, Full Time by Tony Cascarino. It's quite slim as well, so I would recommend that to anyone. All Played Out by Pete Davies, or retitled as One Night in Turin. The access that he had to the England team at Italia 90 and in the build-up is just unprecedented. And the way it's written is fantastic. Obviously, it's all in the aftermath of... it's written within Thatcherite Britain, and all the hooligan problems that had occurred in years previous. But then when they get to the finals, obviously the story of England at Italia 90 is a fantastic one, but the interviews that he gets with the likes of, I mean, Gary Lineker already is coming across as though he's going to be the other scale. You've got somebody like Terry Butcher who doesn't come across, but the way that's written, and as somebody who was too young I was only five at that tournament, I have no recollection of it. It's a really great way to go back to that. And there's the documentary of it, but that doesn't do it the justice that the book does. And my third one is a really recent one that came out last year, Games Without Frontiers by Joe Kennedy.
What's that about?
It's an intellectual book, but it's written in a very readable manner. It's basically a social analysis of football, how we interact with football these days, how we take it in very different means, a sort of a socio-political look at football. In the book, he supports Darlington and Dulwich Hamlet, and he attends a match of each of those. He attends a Newcastle Arsenal match, and he attends a game in, I think it's Sweden, and sort of drawing comparisons between them, but also really focusing on where football stands and what use it has within our society these days. And again, it's quite a slim book, but it's incredibly readable and really, really did contribute to me thinking about things in a different way.
Mm. The new album going to have any sort of slightly sort of anthropological aspects about football? I suppose you've kind of mentioned political points in it from the last year.
Yeah, whilst we were in Portugal, the two main threads going on there were Euro 2016 and also the EU referendum vote, which, unsurprisingly, me being a early 30s guy in a band. I'm very left leaning in my politics, and so that was a huge a really weird scenario, being in Portugal and sort of being grateful to be away from the UK, but also feeling this weird sort of guilty detachment that we weren't there experiencing it with other people. So that finds its way into the record. But also, on the other hand, my greatest comfort in any situation is football. And that's why I think ultimately that's what I really love about football, is that it's almost like an alternative reality that I can exist within. When I'm at a football match, even if my team is losing, I'm sort of detached from the real world. And that's the same with, on a smaller level, watching the game on TV or reading a book or talking with mates about football down the pub. So that's the football is that sort of comforting thing that that I can always turn to. And that's I guess that's the role that football has within the album, within six scenes. Yeah.
Mm. That's a lovely point to end on. I'm afraid we've all got that's all the time we've got for today. But lovely to have you in.
It's been a real pleasure.
And to hear, you know, all your stories and your past experiences. And so you're going off to America, and you're back in April to visit Liverpool.
Yeah,
you're doing a bit of a Stephen Gerrard there.
Yeah, it's the first Maybank holiday weekend, and then the weekend after that we're playing. We start off in Liverpool, and then we play the likes.
On the 27th.
Of April, Liverpool, and then we go to Glasgow, Sheffield, Newcastle, London. Then the following weekend we are in Brighton, Norwich and Birmingham. So that'll be fantastic. Touring is the best part about being in a band, I think, and getting to meet new people and share experiences with people. So yeah, if anybody is listening and likes the sound of that, it'd be a pleasure to see you there.
What is your favourite venue, do you reckon?
My favourite venue is, and again it kind of ties it into football, which is great, Brudenell Social Club in Leeds. I'm sure anybody in Yorkshire, that will come as no surprise to them. It's a working men's club, and it's got a huge stage area which can with a capacity of about 500 people. It's got about six snooker, full size snooker tables, about four pool tables. It's got Sky TV in every room. So it's great for, you know, if there's a gig that you want to see on a Wednesday night, but there's also a Champions League match you want to watch at the same time, no problem. And as far as I'm concerned, that's how every venue should be.
Well, best of luck with the album. I hope you're going to have a great time with that. Cheers, in the States and back. And now playing us out is another song from Six Scenes. This one is Flugklokke Zillin. We'll be right back.
now you have tried them all. A peloton of OAPs cycling up behind me, shouting step up your paces, we got places to be. A pylon of OAPs crashing in my slipstream. Turn, shut up your faces, I'm not your dog.